And once again, it's time for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, www.freakradio.org, 91.3 FM in Olympia, Washington, 87.9 FM on Mojo Radio in Point Arena, California. My name is the V-Man, and today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll be speaking with Jeff Mackler, co-coordinator of the mobilization to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And later in the show, spoken word performance artist Contagious will be spitting some poetry our way. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat coming up straight ahead here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll discuss the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. It's a complicated story that begins in 1981. At that time, Mumia Abu-Jamal was an up-and-coming radio journalist in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who regularly used his talents to expose the daily harassment and violence perpetrated by police against communities of color. He was moonlighting as a cab driver to help make ends meet. In the early hours of December 9, 1981, Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner was found dead from a gunshot wound on a Center City, Philadelphia street corner, and Mumia Abu-Jamal was found lying nearby, unconscious in a pool of his own blood, shot once through the liver. The events of that fateful night may never be known, but one thing is for sure. Mumia Abu-Jamal was convicted in 1982 for Faulkner's murder and has been on Pennsylvania's death row ever since. But his conviction has been condemned worldwide by supporters and activists who say the original trial was marred by prosecutorial and judicial misconduct. Falsified ballistic evidence was introduced, witness testimony was coerced by police, and the dismissal of 11 qualified African-American jurors are some elements of an unfair trial, his supporters say. For the last 21 years, Abu-Jamal has been locked up 23 hours a day, denied contact visits with his family, had his confidential legal mail illegally opened by prison authorities, and put into punitive detention for writing the first of three books while in prison. Abu-Jamal has survived two warrants for his execution, one in August 1995 and again in December 1999. In May 2001, a new legal team took over the case after Abu-Jamal fired his former attorneys, Leonard Weinglass and Dan Williams, after Williams published a book purported to be an inside account of the case. Among the documents turned over to the new legal team was a videotaped murder confession by a man named Arnold Beverly. This confession has been corroborated by several eyewitnesses and substantiated by forensic evidence and a lie detector test. Abu-Jamal's legal team filed this and other evidence simultaneously in both federal court and Pennsylvania state court, seeking to have Arnold Beverly deposed. Included in the evidence filed were new affidavits from Billy Cook, Abu-Jamal's brother, and Abu-Jamal himself, who for the first time stated publicly what happened on the night of December 9, 1981. In July 2001, Federal District Court Judge William H. Yon Jr. denied the motion, citing the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, which grants a presumption of correctness to state court findings. Then in August 2001, Abu-Jamal had a hearing in Philadelphia in front of State Court Judge Pamela Dembe. More than 1,000 of his supporters turned out, but Abu-Jamal was denied the right to be present at that hearing. His attorneys petitioned the court for a new Post-Conviction Relief Act hearing in which the new evidence could be presented. On November 21, 2001, the day before Thanksgiving, Judge Dembe issued a ruling also rejecting the consideration of the Beverly confession. Citing a number of technical matters, the state court judge claims she lacks jurisdiction to hear the case and that the evidence was submitted too late. Then, a month later, on December 21, 2001, federal judge Yon threw out the death sentence, ruling that Abu-Jamal was entitled to a new sentencing hearing, but the decision denied Abu-Jamal the right to a new trial. The case is currently on appeal. Joining us to discuss this complicated case is Jeff Mackler. He is a coordinator of the San Francisco-based Mobilization to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Jeff Mackler, I really appreciate your time tonight. Thanks for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Let's begin with a brief summation of where the case is currently with Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Well, The case is simultaneously in two places. First, the decision that you mentioned of Judge Demby to refuse to consider the confession of Arnold Beverly is on appeal before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. The legal team for the state appeal has also found additional evidence that they have submitted for a ruling of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. This includes a statement by Pennsylvania legal stenographer Terry Maurer Carter, who was present in Judge Sabo, who was the trial judge in Mumia's case, when Sabo said, "Yeah, and I'm going to help him fry the nigger," in reference to Mumia's case. Another judge was also present and heard Judge Sabo say that. "We are litigating that question and essentially seeking to invalidate the entire trial because of the role of Judge Sabo, not to mention the 100 times he ruled against Mumia when Mumia asked fundamental questions like the right to defend himself, the right to be present during his trial. He was removed physically by Judge Sabo from half of his trial, and many other questions. So we're litigating many other factual issues before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. At the same time, the case is pending before the Third Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. That's the mid-level federal court. And that court has put all consideration of Mumia's case on hold until a decision is rendered by the state court. We expect, although we certainly can't predict with any large degree of accuracy, that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court will render a decision sometime before December of this year, although that's just an educated guess. Following that, we will have the right to continue to reopen the federal circuit court appeal. The latest development that impinges on this is a decision of the U.S. Supreme Court in the case called Miller L. This was a decision where the Supreme Court overruled in a death penalty case in regard to a death penalty person a decision of a circuit court of appeals in regard to that court's interpretation of the 1996 Effective Death Penalty Act. Judge Yon, the judge you referred to, who is the federal district court, who ruled against Mumia in regard to some 27 of the 29 issues Mumia raised in his federal appeal, his habeas corpus appeal of the state court decision that found him guilty. Judge John ruled that Mumia was denied a certificate of appealability in 27 of 29 issues he raised. And under the Effective Death Penalty Act, under this new law, a massive change has been ingrained in the federal judicial system. And that is, you no longer have an automatic right to appeal to the federal court at the circuit court level or the U.S. Supreme Court level, unless the lower federal court, the district court, gives you a, quote, certificate of appealability. Mm-hmm. And Judge Yon denied Mumia such a certificate in regard to virtually all of the constitutional questions that he raised in his habeas corpus brief. This new decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Miller L. case effectively deals, well, with another case, with Yon's interpretation of the Effective Death Penalty Act and fundamentally changes the standard that Yon ruled by and changes his imposition of what you called the presumption of correctness having to be with the state court judge to allow a case like Mumia's to be heard in regard to all 27 of the issues. At this moment, we are only able to appeal a single issue to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and that's the so-called Batson issue, or the issue of the exclusion of 11 of 13 black jurors in Mumia's state court trial. Now we hope, with this new decision, when we get to the federal courts, in addition to appealing other issues from the state court, to be able to present to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals or to send back to Judge Yon the full range of issues that the that Yon's interpretation of the Effective Death Penalty Act precluded us from doing.
I see. So essentially, while this is all still in court, Mumia is still on death row, correct? He's still under threat of execution?
That's right.
And
Judge Yon did rule that the sentence that Judge Sabo handed down of execution by lethal injection was not validly arrived at because the jury was not properly instructed as to mitigating circumstances under which they could have found that Mumia should have a life sentence. So what Judge Yon did was he ordered the federal court, the state court, to either have a new trial in regard to the sentencing aspect of Mumia's case, and if they refused to do that in 180 days, then the judge would impose an automatic life sentence. The state of Pennsylvania decided that they disagreed with Judge Yon and have appealed that to the Third Circuit. And Mumia's defense has appealed Judge Yon to the Third Circuit in regard to the 27 other issues that were brought before him. So both sides are appealing. If the state wins their appeal and Judge Yon is reversed, then the death sentence will be reimposed and Mumia's life will hang by a thread as he then goes again before the Third Circuit and the U.S. Supreme Court, which very, very rarely handles a death penalty case. So you're right in saying that Mumia's case is still, life is still in jeopardy. And if the Third Circuit rules for the state of Pennsylvania, the death sentence will be reimposed. For now, it's not.
And in the last election, the voters of Pennsylvania elected as their governor former mayor and former DA Ed Rendell, who was the district attorney at the time of Mumia's prosecution. His wife, as I understand it, sits on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Am I correct?
You know, that's a good one. I didn't know that.
So I guess given that set of circumstances, what then is the likelihood that the courts will rule in Mumia's favor?
Well, now you bring up the a whole different aspect of the case. Mumia's attorneys, past and present, that is, his current state appeal attorneys and his new federal appeal attorney, Robert Yon, believe, along with Mumia himself and all of his defense team groups across the country and the world, that Mumia's life does not hinge on a specific decision of the courts. We now know that there are over 100 issues that any court in the land could find Mumia innocent on. He didn't receive a fair trial. He was denied the right to self-representation. Evidence was planted on the scene. Ballistics evidence was falsified. Witnesses were intimidated. The four witnesses that testified against Mumia, one of them has repudiated their testimony, and three other eyewitnesses have said that they lied before the witness stand, including one who said to a Mumia investigator that everything he said at the state court trial was a lie. So we have enough to repudiate Mumia. The courts have enough evidence to reverse Mumia's conviction and free him today. Whether or not they do that, in our view, does not depend on their abstract interpretation of the law, but rather on our capacity to build a broad social movement deeply rooted in American society that mobilizes to the point where we make the price of Mumia's legal execution, in quotes, too high to pay in regard to a massive loss of credibility in the entire criminal justice system. That is, we have to make it politically impossible for them to kill this innocent man. And our strategy from the very beginning was to combine the very best in legal representation that we could provide to Mumia with a mass action, broad, massive demonstration orientation on every front in America and around the world. That's where we've met with our best success. We have, for example, the San Francisco City Council or Board of Supervisors has called for a new trial for Mumia, as has the Detroit, Michigan City Council, the Berkeley Board of City Council, the 1.8 million member California Labor Federation, European unions from the largest in France, the president of France, including the conservative president, Jacques Chirac, has demanded a new trial for Mumia. In fact, international conferences of governments around the world have taken up Mumia's case, and many have demanded a new trial. The Japanese Diet has called for a new trial. Hundreds of members of parliament from Italy to Portugal to Spain have demanded a new trial and freedom for Mumia. The Longshoremen's Union, the national union that organizes workers from the Mexican to the Canadian border, has organized a one-day strike to demand Mumia's freedom. In other words, we believe that a deepening of the movement to every corner of the planet and every person who cherishes human rights and democratic rights to speak out and mobilize for Mumia is the best way to win his freedom.
You're tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My guest is Jeff Mackler, co-coordinator of the San Francisco-based Mobilization to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. We just have a few moments left, Jeff, so I'd like to get to Mumia's physical health condition right now. As I understand it, he has been experiencing some swelling, some pain in his feet. Can you explain to our listeners what is happening with Mumia's health and what actions can be taken right now to, you know, get him some medical attention?
Well, earlier this week, or late last week, we were concerned with his health. We no longer have such concerns. Mumia has been able to see an attorney, and he's satisfied with the result. The swelling has gone down, and we don't see him in any danger whatsoever. A combination of the bad prison conditions, the lack of exercise, and tight clothing and other things on his leg was, we believe, responsible for the swelling, and we don't think that there's any possibility that he has a blood clot or any other life-threatening illness. So I don't think there is any campaign now. Mumia has seen an attorney, and his concerns medically have been addressed.
That's good to hear.
I would like to give you a couple of phone numbers for activists who might like to work with the Mobilization to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal, if I may.
Sure. We have about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Good. I'll give some phone numbers. You can contact us in San Francisco at 415-255-1080. That's the Mobilization to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal in San Francisco. And if your listeners would like to send a contribution to his legal defense, you can send it to 298 Valencia Street in San Francisco, 298 Valencia, San Francisco, 94103. And we can tell you about upcoming events. We have a concert. We have a reception with Mumia's literary agent and new federal appeals attorney, Robert Bryan, and your listeners may want to attend.
And your website is?
FreeMumia.org.
FreeMumia.org. I've been speaking tonight with Jeff Mackler, co-coordinator of the San Francisco-based Mobilization to Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Thank you for your time tonight, Jeff.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And you are tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. When I come back from a short music break, we'll be joined live in the studio by spoken word performance artist Contagious. Stand by. Stay tuned.
My name is Mumia Abu-Jamal. I'm a journalist, a husband, a father, a grandfather, and an African-American. I live in the fastest-growing public housing tract in America. In 1981, I was a reporter for WUHY-FM and president of the Philadelphia Association of Black Journalists. Currently, I'm a writer and public radio commentator. I've been a resident on Pennsylvania's death row for more than 15 years.
To break free is to begin to heal the broken inner self, to save the soul from dancing with Shaitan.
But you see,
the battle wages on.
The battle wages beyond.
As we sit unified
in trying to identify,
minutes are ticking away and seconds fly by.
And I can hear the piercing cry for freedom when thinking twice about sparing a dime.
Signing on a petition line,
posting a flyer,
speaking out for what's right,
raising our hand to question what's wrong,
when thinking twice could lose yet another life. Mumia Abu-Jamal sits framed beyond the solitary confines of his cell walls for crimes he never committed, but instead for words he admitted, speaking out, for the silence, teaching others, to find strength, fighting back, against brutality, standing up against injustice. Mumia Abu-Jamal, a people's hero, sits awaiting an unwarranted execution. Signed by injustices draped in death cloths, minutes are ticking away and seconds fly by. Let me bring it back home. He is innocent.
And you're tuned to Rockin' the Boat here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, www.freakradio.org. That was I Was Born with Two Tongues, and that track was called For Mumia. I'm joined now live in the studio by spoken word performance artist Contagious. Welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Contagious.
Thank you. Very happy to be here today.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a performance poet, Oregon grown girl from Portland, and I've been doing spoken word through poetry slams, open mics, different artistic events throughout Portland, San Francisco, and Chicago recently. And yeah, if you ever get down to Portland, Oregon, I host an open mic at a place called Heaven Cafe. It's downtown every Sunday at 7, 10th, between Washington and Stark.
Tell us about slam poetry. What does it mean to you, and how did you get involved in it?
A couple years ago, I was taking a class in a community college, and one of our requirements was to go to an open mic. Well, I happened to go to the slam. My teacher was there, and she provoked me into doing the open mic. Then I watched the people slamming and realized I could do that, and so that's when I started getting into it. But slam is basically a scored event of poetry. It's like a competition or a contest. Now, there are a few things about, you know, grading poetry that I don't really feel goes with the idea of poetry in and of itself. But the reason that I partake in it is because that's one place where I feel that poets are really heard. Mm-hmm. Whether the reason may be or may not be a good one, but they are heard. And so that's why I like to speak at poetry slams.
I see. And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Actually, I got to Santa Cruz this weekend. I was taking a trip to Big Basin to clear my head and center my poetic thoughts so I could write more. And so I just came to Santa Cruz in between type of thing. And
right.
Yeah.
And, well, let's just open mic here. Why don't you give us an example of what you do?
All right, this is a piece that I slam or perform a lot of places. I did it actually during the protests in Portland, when people were kind of back and forth. One side's here, one side's here. They're just not really doing anything except for holding up their signs. And I got up and spoke. So, the international language of poetry. The word sounds of happy, foopy things or sadness and woe, Jack Frost and lollipops, but I'm pissed off. I am one uneasy little monkey, and I'm more than profusely upset with this country, the workings and the economy. I'm bigger, we're bigger than this box, and I will raise my hand with fists locked against our soldiers bearing arms, guns cocked. Bayonets drenched with this history's bloodshed. I will make a stand and I'm not gonna cuss because I'm better than that. Okay, wait. Fuck that. I'm fucking goddamn mad. First off, I knew I was destined to make mountains move with my words or I die trying to send, proclaim, and hang with my message. Reiterate and stress the syllables, but I didn't know what for. What worthy cause greater than myself? Greater than uprise instead of demise and respect between person and flight wings open due to independence and peace. It's bigger than the streets of Portland. It's bigger than a bag of chips and then some. I lay dormant in hibernation. Developing hypothesis, plans, rough drafts, the rise in discrimination and its evil roots. Practice verse till throat lozenges couldn't make up for the loss of voice, yet the determination was not gone. I got depressed and stressed with this mess of a world as we know it, in utter amazement. It's like choking down a musty bagel from 1863 and washing it down with a handful of silver tinsel. painful, drains you, but moreover it's not happening. Being tired and just wanting to go home is one thing, but don't turn away, always question the reason behind things, the cause, everything cycles. Why are you tired? Because you've had a long day at work. And why have you had a long day at work? Because you only make minimum wage. Why do you only work for minimal pay? Because you don't fit in their box, so they put you in a cage where you slave away your independence for pennies on the dollar minus benefits or a pension check. And what is it that you're doing all day? Keeping busy. And why are you keeping busy? Because if you're too tired to question what you're really doing when you get home, then you'll keep slaving away as one blind link to a self-defeating chain of citizens. Is that what citizen means? Someone who wears off their own fingerprints of identification so they can give their compensation in the form of currency right back to the same hand? Slavery outlawed? I think not. And what is money, you ask? Well, literally, it's nothing. Not more than paper dyed green with dead white wigged men's portraits imprinted. And the whole thing is pointless. And you can either join the game or you can reject the game. And it can make you or break you. And money is something created by men to keep people separated and keep power where it lays. And it's warmer than you think under a dragon's wing. And that is why most of us enroll right-handedly. So the cycle continues like a laundry machine in the middle of 8 washerless buildings, laundering, bleaching, and selling our souls with no break, like a nanny watching 3 kid families. A murderous rebirth must come first and forthright before tinsel makes its way around our necks like a strangulation device, weaving together many components to suffocate slowly without notice. And we are left on the back porch to hang dry, fingerprintless, names and faces erased. If I can sit down and write this, look, Ma, look what I created. Then knowledge is power, voice is strong, and uniting is unstoppable. So use your brain when you play their game until you educate yourself enough to know better. And when the time is right, the whole thing burns down when one spark is lighted. Can I get a witness to this fire starter?
That's spoken word performance artist Contagious. She's live in our studio. We have a few minutes left, so I'm just going to leave it up to you to want to give us another piece if you got a short one.
Cool. I got another one for you guys.
Great.
If you like what you heard, email me. I can get you a book. My friend and I, Caveman Uncircumcised, together we are a spoken word duo called The Sound of Dirt. So look out for that. If you want to see how it's coming, email me at JIGGAFIX@hotmail.com. She wrote what I read in an earthquake shook, starting in violent shakes from her brain waves. Hair sprayed onto the windshields of cars passing by in the one way. Wipers stuck dry. They came out from the roots, gold flecks speckled from her neck and landed in the pan the bearded man handled below. The cello player's instrument turned into an accordion because the wind picked up and exited her fingertips until a hurricane charged and threw lightning bolts into all the sleeping buildings. Windows, chimneys billowed up, coughs and chokes of brick thick smoke. The willow tree's leaves laughed as a one-legged cat danced. Lamppost bit the dust up and bent over from chrome internally rusted bolts. I looked back. And she cried tears from her pussy, and blood welled up in her eyes, and circling up to the sky, circling swirls of crimson, churning rivers into the heavens, ascending. When she spoke, everyone's pants dropped, and they took their pleather jackets off, and removed their wool socks. After placing both nude butt cheeks on the bare cement like a child, these hatchlings made partings with unorganic shells. Forgot and sought. They forgot and they sought. That very spot where she stood laid a stone inscripted shakily. They all stared at me as I read aloud what she wrote. Carry on. Unravel the rope. I read what you wrote. I read what you wrote. It was you all along, so carry on. She left me with all these people set free, said it was all up to me. I channeled her powerful energy and said, carry on, frolicking like leprechauns. Looked down and my vision was clouded, hazy red. I blinked and a drop of blood descended from my retina, bounced off my knee and joined her cunt cries in the street streaming. There is no good. There is no bad. Miraculously, I stood stripped. My name came back to me. I recorded it so as not to forget. I wrote down human. I am human. All is possible. I turned and walked away, left that place and rested, for I knew nothing was ever going to be the same, and tomorrow's future promised a long day. I knew. Thanks.
Thank you for joining me tonight here on Rockin' the Boat. That was spoken word performance poet Contagious. And your email once again?
JIGGAFIX@hotmail.com.
If folks want to get in touch with her to get... You have a chat book?
I do. I have three of them, as a matter of fact. The first one can be... Well, they all can be found at Powell's Bookstore in Portland, Oregon. Diving All the Way In, Surfacing for Air, and Finding My Light.
All right. So there you go. Folks can contact you. And that's going to wind it up for us tonight here on Rockin' the Boat. Join me again tomorrow from 5:30 to 6 o'clock right here at Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. Thanks for joining me, Contagious.
Been a pleasure.
All right. Stay tuned.